Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Steele here in St. Barts. We had a huge report today, this GDP. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. If you've been following CNBC, this is pretty much all they're talking about, but it just shocked the market in two ways. So actually, let me shoot straight over to, let's start with the Wall Street Journal, and then we're going to go to CNBC, Zero Hedge, check out some charts, and then I'm going to try to connect some dots for you. But I've been trying to reconcile really what's going on underneath the surface the entire day. And it's very, very difficult. Something weird, something strange is happening. And I'm going to reveal what my thoughts are on this kind of strange activity at the end of this video. But before we get there, let's shoot straight over to the Wall Street Journal. And here we go. The punchline, guys. U.S. economy growth slows to 1.6%. Now, this is inflation adjusted, and this is a annualized number. So what they do is they take the number, they basically times it by 12 or whatever to get the annualized number, and boom, there you go. To give you an idea or some context around this 1.6 number to tell you how bad it is, we haven't seen a number that low until, or we haven't seen a number that low since we had the actual, what I would call, a technical recession in the United States back in 2022, when real GDP was actually negative. Remember, that's when the Biden administration was trying to change the definition of a recession, like, oh, negative GDP. No. That's not a recession. Oh, how silly of you plebs out there. A real recession is when you have, you know, then they go down their list of things that they want to kind of get you to focus on instead of the negative GDP. Okay, but see, summary here, another high inflation reading. So this is what was bizarre, is you had, my goodness, nominal GDP must have absolutely tanked, because we did see their core inflation, the PCE, which actually comes out tomorrow in detail. So this is something we're really going to have to watch carefully and see how this plays out tomorrow. I'll try to explain that in a little bit more detail when we get into probably further down this article, or they'll definitely mention it over in CNBC. So the main thing, so let's go over this chart first and foremost. This is the GDP change from the previous quarter. These are the two negative quarters that we saw back in 2022 when the Biden administration was trying to change the definition of recession. And then lately, as you guys know, the mainstream media has been talking about the economy's booming. And this is why, because in Q3 2023, we had a 4.9% reading. In Q4, 3.4, but now plummet all the way down to 1.6. And this was way, way, way under what the market was forecast. So what's really wild is you had the GDP number come in extremely low, but the actual inflation number, PCE, come in extremely high. So here's my first highlighted part of this Wall Street Journal article. So far in 2024, employers around the country have added staff at rates outpacing Wall Street's projection. I just remembered why I highlighted this. Oh, you guys are going to love this. You guys are going to absolutely love this. Whoever wrote this article, you can tell they're a lefty, and here's why. So let me start again. So far in 2024, employers around the country have added staff at rates outpacing Wall Street's projections, meaning, my gosh, so far in 2024, the economy has been booming. I mean, why? Well, obviously, because Joe Biden is bringing in all of these illegal immigrants and giving them $10,000 prepaid credit cards. That's basically the argument. Check this out. But they're saying that in a good way, not in a way that's kind of sarcastic. An influx of immigrants is boosting growth. So my goodness, I mean, you think that all these immigrants taking over New York City or San Francisco or whatever, you think that that's a bad thing? How dare you? We need to bring in millions more. In fact, tens of millions more. Why? Because our economy would boom as a result. Just look at how awesome our economy is doing because we have so many illegal immigrants coming over right now. Talk about a PR spin. My goodness gracious. If you can spin that to something positive, my hat's off to you. That's quite an accomplishment. Getting back to this. Oh, and I like how they say economists say, like they won't put that on any one economist because they know it's total BS. Even as it strains some governments, some government resources. Yeah, I think it's straining pretty much all government resources. They say credit card companies have recently reported that customers are spending more than they did last year. Right. I don't doubt that. Because when you have 10 million illegal immigrants come over and you give them a prepaid credit card on the government dole and they spend it, well, sure, the credit card company is going to be like, wow, we haven't seen this activity since never. My goodness gracious, you've let 10 million illegals in. Why not just let 100 million? And if you really want the economy to boom, and if you really want the credit card companies to print money, I'm sure their shareholders would love it. Just so long as their shareholders didn't live in the United States. That has translated to optimism for many businesses. So again, think about just, I don't know if this person is just so involved in the leftist cult that they can't even see how ridiculous what they're saying actually is to someone that is using common sense, or if they know they're just spewing complete lunacy and they just don't care because they want to see Joe Biden elected because they just hate Trump so much. Like, I don't know where this person falls on that spectrum, but this is just, so they're sitting there talking about how the economy is booming basically because you've got all these illegal immigrants coming in and we're giving them prepaid credit cards. And then they say that this has translated to optimism for many businesses. And that's why earnings season has kicked off into high gear. Yeah, my goodness. If we only would have let tens of millions of illegal aliens in during the GFC, the economy probably wouldn't have even been affected at all. In fact, that's the new form of Keynesian stimulus. Forget QE. No, we don't need that. Forget the Fed's balance sheet. Hell no. Let's just open up the borders. It's just so ridiculous when you say it out loud. Oh, and here's, this gives you an idea of kind of the level of spin. It's not just the illegal immigrants creating a booming economy. It's also war. So Lockheed Martin said it is cranking out new missiles, air defense systems, and space hardware in part to fill a backlog from wars in Ukraine and the Middle East. So now, okay, if we want the economy to just skyrocket, then we just open up the borders. But if we really want to see economic growth to the likes that we have never seen in our lives, if we just combine that with bombing a lot of brown people all over the world, then my goodness gracious, sit down, buckle up, because you're going to get rich. That's basically the message here. Completely insane. Okay, then they go into things that we're going to discuss here with the CNBC article. Oh, geez. All right, well, let's shoot over there. Believe it or not, the CNBC article is a little more or a little less ridiculous. Let me just put it that way. So GDP growth slowed, like we know. Okay, key talking points here. Gross domestic product. Yep. Oh, here's where you get into the estimate. So the estimate was 2.4%. And it comes in at 1.6. That is crazy, crazy miss. Personal consumption expenditures, a key inflation variable for the Federal Reserve, rose at 3.4. And it's not like estimates were, here we go. No, I'm sorry. I thought the next key talking point discussed the delta between expectations and what we saw with this key inflation measure that was revealed in this GDP report, but I think that's probably further down the article here. So here's, okay, consumer spending increased. We got that. Here's another chart similar to the one that we just saw with the Wall Street Journal. And so David Donna Bedian, Chief Investment Officer at CIBC Private Wealth, he said, this is the worst of both worlds. And this is when we're getting into the stagflation. that I talked about in the title, slower than expected growth, higher than expected inflation. But we've got, okay, personal savings rate decelerated in the first quarter to 3.6%, but they don't go over the big miss on inflation. They do that in the Zero Hedge article. So let's shoot over there. Turning to the all important PCE. Now, let me go back to the difference. And this was actually hard to find. I was looking for this for like an hour. And I was even talking to Steve about this. And he's like, dude, I don't know how this works. But he did some research on his end. And the conclusion we came to is the headline number that is outlined in the GDP report that we got today is actually for the quarter, where the numbers that come out tomorrow are going to be for the month, and they're going to have that granular detail we need. Why do we need the granular detail? Because just because we had a huge upside surprise with PCE, it only tells me so much. Like, I want to know why. Let me go through the line items and determine, did everything go up? Was that because of housing? I don't know if, how big of a component housing is with the PCE. Who knows? That might even be something that's eliminated. I want to go through that line item by line item to determine, you know, really what's going on underneath the surface. But getting back to the miss, so this PCE, which is something the Fed pays a lot of attention to, this is excluding the food and energy. They call it core PCE price index, increased 3.7% after increasing 2% and coming in, that was last. So we last month, or the last reading, we go from 2% and it jumps all the way up to 3.7%. I mean, that is crazy. And that was 0.3 above the 3.4% estimate. In fact, it came in above the highest. So the big delta there is what we saw last month and kind of the ramp from 2% all the way up to 3.7. Now, my first question, and it's not answered yet, hopefully this will be answered when the full detailed report comes out for the month tomorrow, is why was the market even expecting 3.4? Like that, that doesn't make any sense to me. So last month, the last reading, it was 2%. And I get why such a huge delta of 1.7% when you're looking at the 3.7 actual number was such a surprise. But again, why was the market even predicting an increase of 1.4%? So that's something that we're going to have to shelf and come back to tomorrow when we get some more data. Commenting on the report, Fitch economist Ulu Sinola writes, the hot inflation print is the real story in this report. If growth continues to slowly decelerate, but inflation strongly takes off, again, in the wrong direction, the expectation of the Fed interest rate cut to 2024 is starting to look increasingly more out of reach. So as a result, we saw the 10-year Treasury yield skyrocket. At one point today, it was up 4.75, right around there, and the 2-year was hanging out around 5%. So we did see a decrease, although we still have an inversion between the 2-year and the 10-year of about, let's just call it 25 basis points or so. Another thing that we're going to have to watch like a hawk tomorrow. So main takeaway, way, way, way lower than expected real GDP, way higher than expected inflation as measured by the quarterly core PCE. We'll have to see what the monthly PCE and the details look like tomorrow. Very, very important. So we'll definitely do a live stream on that. Here's what the mystery is. And like I said at the beginning of this video, this is the head scratcher. This is what I'm trying to reconcile that just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do. And this year, it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, The Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive
2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd.
Let's start by looking at, M1. What I want you guys to do, I want you to ignore from, call it March, when it was about 4 trillion, completely ignore the move straight up from 4 trillion to 16 trillion. Why? Because it isn't an increase in M1. It's just they moved one of the metrics from M2. They just moved it over to M1 because M1 is actually a component of M2. So M2 didn't change at all. It's just they moved a number from M2 over into M1. So this is just, this number isn't indicating anything more than just an adjustment in the way M1 is measured. So what you want to focus on really is the trend up during, let's just call it the GFC to 2020, and then the move from right here, let's call it June of 2020, up to when inflation was really peaking out as far as the CPI, and that would have been, call it June, you know, June, July 2022. But then we see this number plummet all the way down. Now, the pushback there is, George, yeah, I get it, but look at how much money was created above trend line. And we're still way above where we started in, let's say, June, July of 2022. And I understand that. But what happens is prices go up based on the dynamics that we saw. And as we have seen, they don't go back down. So even though we talk about disinflation on this channel all the time, that doesn't mean that prices are going down. They're just going up at a slower pace. But once prices adjust, then you're at that new high water mark, and then they start to go up at a slower pace, right? And it's not saying that they come back down to where they were in 2019. We're never seeing those prices again. Maybe in assets, sure. But in consumer prices, you can just wave 2019 goodbye. Even if we have a hard landing or a recession or a crisis, you know, you look at 2009, and I think it's Q3, we had a decrease, deflation of like maybe 2%, and then went right back up. So at the most, that's what I would expect. But my point is, you just get that high water mark, and that's the reset, if you will. What doesn't happen as a result, let's just say all else being equal, the money supply increases. What doesn't happen is the prices just go up and up and up and up and up and up and up to infinity and beyond, just because you have an increase in the money supply. No, the prices go up to adjust to the level of the money supply, and then they go ahead and flatten out, all else being equal. But if they go up to a high watermark and then the money supply actually goes down, then how are we getting this ramp in inflation to the degree to which we were talking about in that CNBC article when last month, this core PCE was 2%, and now it's all the way up to 3.7. That is a huge increase. How does this happen with money supply going down? Now, there is nuance here that's extremely important. So let's go over to the H6 data, and this is straight on the Fed's website. So we're taking it right from the source. And what I want you to focus on is M1, because to me, this is really the key when you're trying to figure out how many currency units are in the real economy, domestic economy in the United States. This has nothing to do with dollars outside the US, but in the US domestic economy chasing goods and services. Because if you think about it, like we've got these non-M1 components of M2, which are small denomination time deposits, basically CDs. So is the money in CDs out there chasing goods? And not really. Or we've got retail money market funds. Is the 1 point, you know, now where are we? 1.7 trillion in retail money market funds. Is that out there chasing goods and services? No. In fact, most of it was parked at the Fed in reverse repo until recently. So you understand why I don't really include this when I'm trying to figure out inflationary pressures. What I like to focus on is checking deposit balances. How much money do people have in their checking account? Because to me, that's the high velocity money. That's the money that's out there chasing rent, car insurance, health insurance, Chipotle, the movie theaters, the bar, the cafe, airline tickets, etc. It's checking balances. It's not really retail money market fund. So when we look at M1 specific, kind of break it down, there we go. Going all the way back to November of 2022, we see that we had about 5.1 trillion. And we fast forward to today, pretty much the exact same. It hasn't really, in fact, if anything, it's gone down. Look at other liquid deposits. Now, the majority of that's just a fancy way of saying savings accounts. The majority of this 12 trillion is savings. But look where it is today. We go from 12.6 trillion all the way down to 10.7. Now, this I don't think is disinflationary or deflationary because it's not like the money is disappearing, right? It's not going to money heaven, although some of it is with the Fed reducing the size of their balance sheet, QT. To explain that, it would require the whiteboard, which when I get back into Medellin, if this is still a hot topic, I'll definitely address. But it's too complex to go over in just one of these live streams. But the punchline is what's likely happening is the majority of these savings are not going to money heaven. They're just going over into CDs or they're going over to retail money market funds. Because look at the CD amount. You got 300 billion and now we go all the way up to almost 1.1 trillion. We go from 1.1 trillion on the retail money market funds all the way up to 1.7. So you can see, and this makes a lot of sense, right? If you've got a savings account that's giving you 2%, but this retail money market fund will give you 5, no brainer. I mean, you're not using the money anyway. It's just sitting in your savings account. So why not put it in a CD or a money market fund where you're going to get twice as much interest? And my view, that explains perfectly what happened here. So it's not really like the money supply went down. It's just that it kind of changed composition. So that's why you see such a delta between M1, which really went down, and M2, which only went down slightly and then kind of flattened out. But really what I want you to focus on are the checking account balance. So let's just assume that the checking account balances continue just to kind of trend down. That is money going to, I guess you could say the checking accounts could go over here. So it might not go over to money heaven. But when I'm talking about the currency units that are actually chasing goods and services and putting upward pressure on consumer prices, it's in my view, it's all about this field, this line item right here. And if that continues to go down, I don't see how you can have sustained consumer price inflation. Even if oil is going up, even if wages are going up, that's fine. But that's going to just take a bigger percentage of this $5 trillion. And if that's taking a bigger percentage of the $5 trillion, that means there's a lower percentage for discretionary items, which would likely bring down the prices. And oh, by the way, a lot of businesses go bust, unemployment goes up, and then the demand starts to fall for all the things that were going up in price with very inelastic demand, which led to that dynamic to begin with. So you could say, well, George, the release valve is velocity. And I think there's some merit because even if you have a declining money supply, if the velocity speeds up to a point, you could still see upward pressure on prices. But even if we see velocity increasing, I don't see how that's sustainable. Here's another thing that I want you to think about. We hear, and this is, we know the government's deficit spending like a drunken sailor. And the narrative is, well, this is all this fiscal. This is propping up the economy. But wait a minute here. If we're seeing all of this fiscal, what that means is the government's most likely taking that out of savings, which would make sense why we're going from 12 trillion down to 10 trillion, roughly. But then where would they be spending that? They would be spending that. People would get the check from Janet Yellen, let's say Social Security check, STIMI check, check to Lockheed Martin, you know, to go bomb some brown people. And they would deposit that, and that would go into a checking account, right? So, by the way, the checking account balances, that this is all non-bank. So all the mega corporations and everything, that would include the corporations and the average Joes and Janes and the SMEs, the small and mid-sized enterprise or business. So if the government is doing all of this fiscal, that should show up in checking account balances, but it's not, which is completely bizarre to me. You got to ask yourself, where is it going? I mean, is it strictly going into savings? Not really, because you've got bank credit, which you've got to pay attention to, because that's usually the driver of money supply growth. That's pretty much flat. So you've got M2 flat, you've got the bank credit flat, you've got loans and leases that have ticked up recently, but they're basically flat for quite some time as well. So the fiscal, I don't know where it's going, right? You would assume that this number would go down, but this number would be going up. Now, maybe you could argue that all of this fiscal spending, or a lot of it, is being spent overseas. I mean, maybe that's it, that these huge deficits that we're running, a lot of it is spent at home, but maybe the offset is the decrease in the Fed's balance sheet, QT, which we need the whiteboard for. Basically, what that means is the Fed is letting these treasuries mature. And in order to do that, Janet Yellen from the TGA pays off the Fed, but the Fed doesn't get money. They just simply reduce the balance in the TGA, where Janet Yellen sucked money out of M2 to put in the TGA to begin with. So then when the Fed decreases their balance for Janet Yellen to pay Jerome Powell for the maturing treasuries, that decreases M2 money supply, and it doesn't recirculate back into the economy. It's just a complete decrease. So that might be one thing, that's one component of what's going on here. Another component might be the fact that Janet Yellen is simply, it would have the exact same effect, or it's effectively the same thing. When Janet Yellen is paying off, let's say, a Japanese billionaire that has $10 billion in treasuries, and he's letting them mature because he needs the dollars. Okay, well, the TGA dollars are, you know, the bank reserves go into an account for a U.S. domestic bank, but the liability on the commercial bank's balance sheet does not stay within the U.S. banking system. Assuming that Japanese billionaire wants those dollars in his Japanese account that's dollar denominated, right? So that would reduce M2 money supply in the United States as well. So there's as you can tell, there's a lot of moving parts here for sure. And we've got inflows and outflows. Another thing would be the trade deficit, right? Because we're running a $60 billion trade deficit right now. So those are dollars that are leaving the United States. All else being equal, you would expect that to decrease one of these money metrics, most likely the demand deposits. But you see, again, if that's decreasing it, then where are these currency units coming from that are leading to this massive uptick in consumer price inflation? And you say, George, you don't get it. This is just the 70s, the 70s. Okay, well, if this is the 70s, if that's your argument, then what we have to do is we have to go back and look at the exact same metric in the 1970s. And let's go ahead and zoom in. It's one of the neat things about these charts. So here we go. We've got the 1970s. This is 1970 to 1981. And show me the decline, other than when you could argue Volcker broke the back of inflation right here. So in this period of high inflation that everybody is calling or using this as an analogy to what we are facing right now in the 2020s, look at what money growth did the whole time. And why? Because the banks were lending like crazy. And then compare that to this. And again, you can't factor this in. You have to eliminate this up move, because that was just a changing in the way it was measured. That's not an increase in the money supply. So eliminate this And imagine that this point on the chart just starts right here. So it goes up slightly, but then it flattens out, then it actually completely declines. Compare that to the 1970s. And this is like the ultimate head scratcher. And I'm not waving the white flag. I'm doing my best to figure this out. I'm going to be doing more homework today, more homework tomorrow, because I want an answer here. I want, nobody knows definitively, but I want something that makes sense when you look at the actual data and you look at the actual charts, because this is the only way that any of us are going to be able to determine the probabilities of 2024 seeing a re-acceleration in inflation, or this is just a bump in the road to further disinflation. That's really what we're trying to figure out here with these numbers. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism. You got to check out Rebel Capitals Live. For heaven's sakes, Mike, I had that pulled up this morning. We're getting a lot of people that are buying tickets. I mean, this is going to be an incredible event. Who do we have coming? We've got Mike Green, Kenny Snyder, Hartman, Chris McIntosh, Mark Moss, Joseph Wang. We got Rich Cooper talking about red pill stuff. Ivor Cummins, who I keep saying, is I think going to be one of your guys' favorites. We got Barnes. We'll throw in another speaker. And look at the VIPs. We've got Kiyosaki going to be there. Johnson, Viva Fry, uneducated economist. Tracy Schuchart's going to be there. And Josh Lessard.
Come on.
Just having the opportunity to meet Josh Lessard himself is well worth the price of the ticket. I can assure you of that. So get your tickets.
I think Shane, you got to put Shane up there as a VIP guest as well.
Oh, Shane's going to be there.
Marina Wolf, Shane.
I was going to say he promised every one of the rebel capitalists, that he will be wearing his merino wool shirt. So you can actually get a selfie with Shane himself wearing the now infamous shirt from our Argentina trip. Can't beat that. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com, get your tickets. We'll see you in Orlando, May 31st.